Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast. I am Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Today, it's a YouTube fireside chat. All about those crazy cats, Romeo and Juliet. But first, some Theater Folk news. RNJ, RNJ, it's RNJ all the way. See, this is what happens when I make stuff up on the fly. It sounds as ridiculous and dorky as it just did coming out of my mouth. All right. So, not only is Romeo and Juliet the focus of this podcast, it's also the focus of our March newsletter. And yes, Romeo and Juliet was the focus of our February newsletter. And yes, it's going to be the focus of our April newsletter. This is not a 3-hour tour I am on. This is a 3-month extravaganza. Will I ever be done with this play? And it's my fault. It's totally my fault. It's my fault because I love this. I love diving into a script and just doing the analysis and coming up with exercises. And before I know it, it's The Beast. And The Beast is 15 pages long, and that's too long. And I haven't even started on the language. I have not even started. So in February, we looked at the story of Romeo and Juliet. In March, it's the characters and the relationships between the characters. And April will all be about the language of Shakespeare, the language that in Romeo and Juliet. And that's it. It has to be. I cannot spend a quarter of a year on this one play. Well, I could, but I won't. Anyway, it's a good newsletter. It's a great newsletter. I think that's a totally backwards compliment that I really wanted to say here was that it's fantastic. I love it. I love the exercises. It's large because it's a fascinating play, and there's lots to talk about, and getting knee deep in with the characters and figuring out what they're all about, I think it's worthwhile. And so don't fear the behemoth, embrace it, or something like that. And lastly, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every Wednesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on the Stitcher app and you can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search for the word Theater Folk. Hello, here we are, all snuggled up in front of our computer fire for our YouTube fireside chat.
Crackle, 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 crackle.
I don't need to introduce Craig.
He's making fire noises. Did you want another log on there, or are we good?
You know what? I'm feeling a little bit chilly. Can you put another log on our fake computer fire?
I will do that.
All right. Awesome.
Thump.
Perfect. Perfect. So for this episode, since I'm in the middle of my 3-month behemoth extravaganza of Romeo and Juliet, we thought, well, why not include everybody into my little hell, which is not. I'm really enjoying it. It's long, Craig. It's very long that I'm working on this play.
It started out as one newsletter, and then you came to me and you said, it's getting kind of long and I have to cut it off. And I said, okay, we'll make it 2 newsletters. And then when you worked on the second one, you said, it's getting kind of long. I said, well, we should cut it into 3 newsletters. Now, I need you to promise me in front of the entire world that you are not going to go beyond 3 newsletters.
Well, I already, in the intro for this podcast, I've already stated that I am cutting it off.
Okay.
So now I've stated it twice, so that means it must be true.
Okay.
And this is going to be, not to print, that if it's in print, it must be true, but it's going to be on the internet, so it must be true, right? Because everything
on the internet is true.
Right. So just to keep this going, we're going to look at YouTube clips of Romeo and Juliet. And so, of course, we're focusing on the 2 movies that were made, the 1968 Zeffirelli and also the 1996 with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes. We also have a ballet version in there. And just right up front, I want to say we are not going to look at West Side Story. Yes, West Side Story is a movie version of an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. But Craig, you looked at the clips and didn't quite...
Well, we're kind of focusing mostly on the balcony scene. And I don't know. I just don't think that's a great movie of the play. I think it's a great play, but I don't think the movie's all that good. She's not even singing in it.
Awesome. So yes, we know. And no, we're not doing it. So the first one is... the 1968 movie, and we are, yes, and we're looking primarily at balcony scenes.
Oh, be some other name. What's in a name? That which you call a rose. By any other name would smell as sweet. So Romeo would. Were he not Romeo called?
So what did you think of this balcony scene?
When you sent me the clip and I watched it, I remembered I actually watched this movie in high school.
I did too. And okay, so I have a question for you because when
it was not censored when I saw it. And this is an all boys Catholic high school.
Oh my,
and
they must have flipped their lids.
Somewhat scandalous.
See, my grade 9 teacher stood in front of the television at that point.
Oh.
So everyone knew that Olivia Hussey was topless at a particular moment.
But, everyone knew it in my class, I'll tell you that.
So when I looked at this, I have to say, this is kind of what I imagine Romeo and Juliet would look like. It's sort of that, it's classical, it's romance, it's sort of breathless, it's kind of childish.
Well, childish for sure, because the characters are very young, and the play takes place at a time where kids didn't grow up quite so fast. So what I really appreciated about the clip... and these characters and the casting was that you really get a sense of how young they are and
yes.
how reckless the choices they're making are because of their incredible youth.
I'm not sure I would agree with the notion that they didn't grow up as quickly. I think they were sometimes sheltered, but I think in this time period they would have been exposed to life and death from day one, I think.
Maybe not Juliet, though.
Not that that's a... Aha! Ha 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 ha! Except who... And this is something that I've really come to look at when I was studying the play and also comes up in the other two clips. Who has she been listening to since the day she was born?
The nurse.
How does the nurse talk?
The nurse is dirty.
Nurse is dirty, okay. Right? The nurse is dirty. When she says... parts and any other part belonging to a man.
She knows what she's talking about.
I think so. Okay, and in this particular clip, I don't get that at all. I get that Olivia Hussey just sort of breezes by it, and it's very, but it's very interesting in that childlike way as a comparison to the other two clips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very immature. I thought that what I really liked about this one, I think probably the most about all of them, is how well they read the language and how natural how natural the language sounded in their mouths.
It sounded very romantic. I got a real.
I'm just speaking of the clarity of
right.
what they're saying.
Right.
There was no Shakespeare affectation. It sounded the words coming out of their mouths sounded like natural words, and they were easy to understand as a viewer.
So for the for the 1996 movie, what we've got is just a little bit different. It's the same scene. Actually, we're going to talk about Romeo and Juliet's first meeting, but the two moments from the 1996 movie, Baz Luhrmann, we don't have the dialogue. And do you remember when we used this movie in a workshop
mm-hmm.
and we tried to illegally tape the prologue so that we could... show it in mm-hmm. a variety of classes, and you couldn't do that. So I imagine it's the same thing. There's no big chunks of this movie out there on YouTube.
Yeah, the clips we found don't have even the dialogue, really, or they have some sound on top of them.
But I think that's actually very interesting. When we mm-hmm. we just look at visuals. So the first visual is that we have Romeo and Juliet's very first meeting. And in the 1996 movie, we have Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes sort of meeting eye to eye through a fish tank.
Mm-hmm. Well, theater is about words, especially Shakespeare is about words. He had no scenery. Everything was created with the words that were coming out of the characters' mouths. Now, film is completely different. Film is about visuals and imagery. And so it was, when you transition from a piece of theater to a piece of film, you've got to make that, you've got to change things around and make things a visual. And so this scene, the meeting scene, is a brilliant example of accomplishing what you need to accomplish, which is, I mean, you know everything about the two characters just from watching that scene, even, mm-hmm. even if you knew nothing of Romeo and Juliet.
I really believed in the notion of love at first sight in this teeny mm-hmm. tiny, and when you, if you go back and watch it, it's actually from an Italian version. So basically you can stop watching this clip when they start speaking Italian. But I really believed in this notion, the visual of love at first sight, that they were captivated by each other just by seeing each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was lovely.
And I love they're looking when you, the clip will be posted below this on the podcast page. When they're looking at each other, they're looking at each other through a fish tank. And it's a really neat image because when they're on either side of the fish tank, it looks like the other is very close.
Yes.
But when you see the fish tank from the outside, it's very thick. So it's the refraction of the water that's making it look like they're close to each other, which is, of course, quite symbolic of where they are.
And how close they are and how far apart they are.
Mm-hmm. They both feel like they're very close to each other, and yet there's this huge wall that's between them.
Mm-hmm. Very romantic. I quite liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So then the third clip is the actual balcony scene. And for some reason, someone has posted the balcony scene with driving music underneath it to drive, which completely blocks out the text. So when you watch this clip, just turn off the music. Just look at the visuals, which I think, again, a very interesting take on this scene. Because, we're going to talk about this with we're going to look at an RSC clip, is that really you have Juliet up top and more often than not at the back. And Romeo was looking at her. How do you stage the very static thing so that Romeo was not looking half his back to the audience for the whole scene?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just really well accomplished in terms of how they use the space. And the first thing I like about this particular clip is the humor and the acknowledgement that Romeo is somewhere where he's not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're both a little clumsy, a little klutzy. I love the danger in the scene. Mm-hmm. I love the recklessness of it all. They're clearly doing something that they shouldn't be doing. Now, I have trouble sometimes with Lerman's movies because they move so much. They're so big and they're full of sound and movement. And it's wall to wall from beginning to the end. And which is great for a music video, but I can't deal with it for an hour and a half. But anyway, look at this scene. What I love about it is how visual it is, how mm-hmm. active it is. And you can watch this scene with the sound down and still understand exactly what's happening
mm-hmm.
and what they're doing.
What their relationship is mm-hmm. and how Romeo is taken with her. And there's a wonderful, completely interesting way of when he announces himself to her, you know, and she's, you know, when she has said, you know, I love you and I would like to, when she thinks she's alone and she is sort of standing in front of a pool and he kind of comes up and scares her and they mm-hmm. end up in the pool. And so their whole interaction is in water. And it just, again, I really got the sense that, yep, I believe they would start making out, and they do. And it was just a really great, texture's the wrong word, but environment, I really mm-hmm. liked the use of the environment. And there is actually a security guard who comes by and she's got to dunk him underwater at one point. Mm-hmm. There's an acknowledgement. Yeah, there's acknowledgement of danger.
I love this film. And I don't think we have a copy. We should pick up a copy because it's a wonderful example of modernizing Shakespeare, keeping the text original, and making it really relevant, really easy to follow. it's kind of an, it's set in modern times. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a gang situation. Yeah. But yeah, like even right from the opening prologue, it just grabs you and does not let go until the end.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So then as a contrast, we also have the balcony scene from the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of Romeo and Juliet. And all right, what did you think about this?
I thought, okay, well, here's the problem. I found it very stagey. But it's a piece of theater. I know it is. But I'm watching it through the medium of film, and I've just seen these films. So that's what I'm kind of comparing it to. I think it's probably pretty good, but I got distracted by the editing is terrible. And I know we're not supposed to be evaluating this. We're just supposed to be talking about the performances. But the editing is very disorienting, you know?
I will agree with that.
Yeah.
I occasionally would go to a close-up of Juliet's face and it was...
Yeah, it's not well put together. I just... In the theater, I just long for just a static... If they're not going to do anything film-wise, just go for a static shot and that'll be fine, because then you get a perspective of what the audience sees. Because his I don't know if the production was like that, but his back would have been to the audience quite a bit, the way it was staged in that scene.
The way I was looking at it, there was a lot of, it seemed to be a consideration in the round. He moved quite a bit,
right,
back and forth. I think it's a thrust, Craig. Yeah. I think you're right that it wouldn't be as bad as a proscenium.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say I really quite enjoyed this scene for a couple of reasons. I like that when he said, but soft what light through the underblaze, sorry for totally mangling that, he wasn't saying it because he saw Juliet. He saw it because the light came on and thought he was about to be
scared
discovered.
Scared the hell out of him, yeah.
And it scared the hell out of him. And I thought, oh, that's neat. That's new. And then when he started talking, he was talking to Juliet's the door, the balcony, as if she were there and just sort of imagining her there, and then she appeared. And I just thought, oh, that was neat and fresh. I quite like that. And I thought the language rolled off their tongue. Like, I just thought it ebbed and flowed so that it wasn't, it didn't sound all the same. It sounded really delicious to me. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. They used the words very effectively.
Yeah, and I loved that when she said Romeo is in this moment, and he's in this romantic gesture, and she says his name for the first time, and he falls to the ground because it was so unexpected. And I went, oh well, I quite like that too. You know, like I'm not sure I've seen like that was like it was a just a wonderful. Wonderful moment. And this was really the Juliet that when I think of, after studying the play, what I wish Juliet would be, I liked the way she did it. She was contemplative. She is contemplative. Well, one thing that I say about the difference between these two characters is that when Romeo is talking to her, he's talking in boy, isn't she pretty? Ain't she pretty? Terms. And she is contemplating a very complex problem. How do I love my enemy? Do I love my enemy? Well, if my enemy had another name, I would love him. So I love my enemy. Like,
that's a big concept, yeah.
Two different levels. And I just felt she was really contemplating it. And when she said any parts, like any other parts to a man, it was very clear what she was talking about.
Well, they were much more mature actors, too. They were clearly the oldest of the lot that we saw.
Yeah, so I guess maybe that's a question. About what's more effective, you know? Like, do they need to be children? Is it effective because it's the tragedy that they are so young? Did that make any sense?
Yes. You're saying, is it important to have younger actors play those roles? And you're saying, is it important because does Shakespeare think that is important?
Right.
I think he does. I mean, it's kind of mentioned in the play, isn't it?
Yes, but he thinks it's important because in the original story, Juliet's like 16, 17. Like, he purposely lowered her age.
Right. So there you know that he's made a choice. Well, one could also argue that is because of the actor who was going to be playing Juliet.
Oh, that's a good point. Because it would have been a boy.
Mm-hmm.
So... Okay, good point.
But then again, a boy is also playing Lady M, so I guess...
And the nurse.
Yeah.
Okay, so and then
I'm thinking of like the, you know, he could have written it for a specific
boy. I'm sure he did. And the last one that we're going to look at purposefully has no words in it because it is the ballet version of Romeo and Juliet. You gave me a look. What was the book?
I give you a look because my notes have two words and you wrote a page on this. So I'm very curious.
Okay, well, what are your two words?
My words were, wow, beautiful. I mean, I just thought, I thought it was gorgeous. And I, it's so, I'm not a really a ballet person. I've never been to the ballet. And I thought it was wonderful how they're able to just as effectively tell the story of a scene through dance. I mean, I've been to dance shows before, but I thought it was quite brilliant. I was quite moved by it.
So I had a couple of things. It's very interesting that, you know, when you only have gesture and the body to share your story, and in this scene, they get right to it. There is no moment for Juliet to espouse, to pontificate on her situation. Mm-hmm. They see each other right away. They get together right away. And my favorite part of it was when they first get together on the floor, they hold hands and they walked. You know, like, this is ballet, this is dance. And mm-hmm. that was their first moment together, which I thought was very wonderfully simple. And then she puts his hand on her heart. Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. What I thought was kind of interesting, it's all a joy. That's really the joy of love is the theme of the dance. What I thought was interesting is that in the dance, he dances for her, and she really is there for him. She gets a little solo, but not really. Mm-hmm. Not as demonstrative as he does, and she is there for him. The movement repeated over and over again is she runs away, he opens his arms, and she runs to him. Mm-hmm. She runs to him. She runs to him. And I think that in the text, she's the one driving the scene. In the ballet, he's the one driving the scene.
Interesting.
So that just me being over analytical, perhaps. Again, the joy of the situation and the true nature of love, you know, was very evident. They very much brought that to life, I thought.
Mm-hmm. They were a great, great team.
Apparently they have teamed. These particular dancers have done much work.
They've
together.
Done this before.
They, you know, okay. A couple of times.
They've been
you know?
Down there, huh? They look like they knew what they were doing.
Awesome. Okay. Well, holy smoly, we've been talking for quite a long time on this. So I think that is where we are going to end.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Craig Mason.
Thank you, Lindsay Price.
All right. That's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.